Cervical cancer is among the most highly preventable and curable cancers affecting women. But in the American South,
Black women are more likely to die of cervical cancer.
Dr. Evelyn Reynolds is a Black gynecologic oncologist in Atlanta who treats this population.
Part of it is they present at a later stage at diagnosis. Some of this may be due to less access to care. But unfortunately, sometimes when they do access care, there are studies that show that they receive less aggressive treatment.
In nearby Alabama, a Human Rights Watch report found that Black women are dying of the disease at twice the rate of white women. Kelly Flannery researched and wrote the report, and she's a fellow in the Women's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. Kelly, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So give us a sense of your research here. What led you to want to study Black women, particularly in the South?
So I think to start with, exactly as you said, cervical cancer is highly preventable. And so when you're coming at this from a human rights lens, we look at cervical cancer and what we see is the ultimate expression of marginalization in the healthcare system. And we know that not all women are dying from cervical cancer. Certain communities, certain pockets are dying at much higher rates. And this is down to who can access services, who government policies support, and who they don't. And what we know is that Black women are dying from this disease at much higher rates than white women, especially in Alabama.
I mentioned Dr. Reynolds at the top of the show, who's in Atlanta, who does work with this population. We spoke to her, and she told us a little bit that education and screenings, and to your point, the limits to accessing a woman's care can play a role in this. I want to play a clip from her.
One of the findings in this report is that Black women over the age of 65 also have worse survival rates. So you can imagine the screening guidelines state that, you know, at age 65, if you have had prior adequate screening, you can stop screening at that time. However, if a woman comes in at 65 because now she qualifies for Medicare, so she's just starting her screening where she hasn't been screened in the last 30 years, she still needs to be screened for cervical cancer.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is exactly what we found by talking to older women in the Alabama Black Belt. So some of the older women that we talked to said that once they were able to go back to the doctor pretty consistently at 65, that it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't raised as an issue. And one of the women I spoke to, it broke my heart, but she said she hadn't had a cervical cancer screening, a pap test or HPV test in 10 years. And when I asked her why, she said, because my doctor just hasn't recommended it. And then I asked her, you know, if your doctor recommended it, would you? And she said, yes, because I want to stay healthy. And so it's complicated. When you have screening guidelines that tell you that women should stop screening at 65, you have this really significant caveat that says, if you've had adequate prior screening. And a lot of folks haven't been able to because of a patchwork system of healthcare that you see in Alabama.
And Kelly, do we also know about the racial disparities there in which women are getting pap smears versus which aren't?
So we do. And one of the things is, so starting pap smears were first started to be used in the 1920s, but they were regularly used around the 1940s. And we saw a really significant decrease in cervical cancer mortality. So generally, when we think of pap smears, we think more pap smears mean less cervical cancer deaths. You're not actually seeing that in Alabama. So in Alabama, in the U.S. generally, Black women are much more likely to access pap smears than white women, but that's significantly true in Alabama. Their screening rates are actually better, higher than the national average. But you still see the highest cervical cancer death rate, and you see shocking racial disparities. So what we have when we screen for cervical cancer, it can tell you when there's changes in the cervix, abnormal changes, but you need more. You need follow-up from that. You need something called a colposcopy. And what that enables you to do is diagnose what those changes are, if they're precancerous changes or if they are cancerous changes. And this gives you the opportunity to intervene early. So it's this next layer of step. It's getting past the pap smear to the gynecologist in order to get a colposcopy, that necessary follow-up care to find out what's really going on and prevent cervical cancer death.
So what are some of the barriers to care that you found in your report?
So first, what we see is Alabama has taken a patchwork approach to healthcare. They have the lowest Medicaid eligibility levels in the nation, tied with Texas. And so, for example, the only state program that is specifically designed to link women to cervical cancer care is radically underfunded. I talked to some of the folks who run the program, and they actually can't and won't do more outreach in order to link more eligible women to the program for the very fear of running out of money. This means that only one in five eligible women are actually accessing the services they're eligible for to prevent cervical cancer. So we have a problem with consistent access to healthcare coverage, and we also have a problem with just not having enough gynecologists. Like I said, maybe you can do a Pap's test at your local health department, but in order to get that necessary follow-up care to prevent cervical cancer deaths, you have to go to a gynecologist. About half of the counties in Alabama don't have one, and only 4 out of the 17 counties in the Black Belt do. This has very real consequences for women's lives. Women described how they had to give up on buying healthy food, cut back on like necessary medications, or even not pay electric bills in order to afford to travel to a gynecologist.
I was just going to ask you, how does socioeconomic status factor in here? Are these largely poor Black women?
Yeah. So when you think of cervical cancer, this is primarily a disease of poverty and exclusion. Not having adequate social support in order to access the care that you need. Now, when you're talking about poverty and exclusion in Alabama, in the U.S. generally, it's always really important to remember that we also have systems of racial inequality that are embedded in the health and education system. So, yeah, it's a real challenge. If you don't have the resources in order to travel 2-3 hours to get to the care that you need, you might need to prioritize buying a healthy meal for your family over your own reproductive health care.
And we mentioned HPV sort of earlier on, but I want to talk a little bit about the vaccine. It's meant to protect women and men from this virus, but specifically women from getting cervical cancer. How big of a role could it play here in Alabama?
Yeah, it could play a really significant role. Right now, Alabama's vaccination rates are low compared to the nationwide vaccination rates. And so this really has the ability to nip cervical cancer in the bud by preventing women from developing HPV. And if you don't have HPV, cervical cancer is largely caused by persistent infection with HPV. So you could really dramatically cut cervical cancer rates. And I do want to flag that as great and hopeful as we are about the HPV vaccination, it'll still take years for that vaccination to get into effect. So we need to make sure that we're also concentrating on getting women out to Paps and colposcopies, that necessary follow-up treatment as well.
Kelly Flannery is a fellow in the Women's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch and the author of the new report on cervical cancer in Alabama. Kelly, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.